You know that feeling when your day finally slows down and you just want to relax, unplug, and feel good? That's where Mood.com comes in. They're changing the game, delivering legal THC products right to your door, no shady dealers, and absolutely no medical card required, just good vibes and better sleep, shipped straight from their farm to your couch. From delicious THC gummies, smooth vape pens, to premium THC flower, Mood has it all. And everything's federally legal under the 2018 Farm Bill. Yeah, this isn't some loophole. It's the real deal. Head to Mood.com and use code FIRST20 for 20% off your first order. That's MOOD.com. Find your mood.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Welcome to the Lorehounds Podcast, where the Lorehounds, your guides to psycho history. I'm John.
And I'm Marilyn. This is our coverage of Foundation on Apple TV Plus, Season 3, Episode 6, The Shape of Time. If you want to get in contact with us, and we would love to hear from you, send an email please, to empire@thelorehounds.com, or head to our Discord server for the link tree in the show notes, where conversation flows very nicely.
And if you like what you've heard and you want to support us directly and get ad-free and bonus content, you can check the same link tree for our Patreon and Supercast subscription options. All right, Marilyn. So we're back. This is a few days after we recorded our Episode 5 podcast. And surprise, I had COVID all along. So for those of you following at home, my voice is still a little off, but I think it's mostly back now. So just wanted to flag that. But we're doing okay now. It's just, you know, just getting the last touches back on ourselves.
We'll do it. I mean, you never would have known from the energy and the presentation
Well, I appreciate that, Marilyn. I try to keep it up.
And I'm just glad that you're, COVID is in the rear view mirror now for you.
It's in the rear view. It's still lingering in the tunnel of my larynx. And that's why I sound like this. But all right. So let's get right into it. Marilyn, what did you think of the episode?
I liked it very much. However, I have to say I liked it much better on the second viewing. Now, I think this is probably because I had so many notions about what direction they might be heading in at the end of the last episode, which was a real cliffhanger. I mean, two or three cliffhangers, if you will. And so having to discard so many of my ideas and keep up with the important points at the same time made it an episode that felt a little bit jumbled for me. When it really was my mind that was jumbled, so it wasn't the episode. So having watched it a second time, I think it's a great episode. I really enjoyed it.
Very good. I do too. I think it's a great episode.
Yeah. The music just gets better and better. And I love the imagery of Mycogen. They're doing such wonderful things with that. The mushroom shapes and the puffball lights and Songbird's decor. It's just beautiful, beautiful. And that realization of the open air market, excellent. Really fine. Not that I've ever been to an Asian open air market, but still, that general feel was just, it's all terrific. I'm really enjoying it. So what about you?
I think it's fantastic. I am more and more confident in my theories. I think we are pointing right towards it. I'm very excited. Those of you who have read the books, you know what I'm talking about, I think. I think Marilyn, you suggested this, and I haven't even responded to you off air, but I think you're right. We should do a book spoiler podcast towards the end of the season, or maybe at the end of the season.
It'd be a lot of fun. I think all of us who do know the books are kind of, oh, this, oh, that, oh, look at this. So
Yeah, there was also a Demerzel clue and a Demerzel identity clue from the book in this, and I think that was really interesting too.
Yeah.
It just feels so faithful in tone and like type of mystery and storytelling to the Asimov books, while still making a lot of changes to make it more modern and to, you know, make it a more coherent story with similar characters going through the experiences instead of changing every season.
Right.
I think they are really nailing the adaptation still, and I'm so pleased with it. And I also really love all the chemistry between the actors this season, especially the new actors. I think Beta and Torin are a really amazing addition. Even Randu facing off against Inber is really fun. You know, that's a fun little duo. And then Han's pretty good. He hasn't gotten much to do this episode, so there's not much to say about him this episode, but I'm enjoying him when he is around.
Oh, I am too. And I agree with you. He doesn't have a whole lot to work with in this episode. But
no, he's mostly just like, hey, I'm mad.
Yeah, right. With
general
sarcasm as needed.
Right. General sarcasm.
Stand up!
All right. Well, I think let's get right into the breakdown. We start off with a cold open with the mule. Is it a cold open? I think it was actually after the credits, but a short open, let's see. Yeah. With the mule awakening from a nightmare, saying for years he has felt like he has been wearing someone else's dreams, and that he has been haunted by Gael Dornick, who he now knows the name of. He orders the Black Tongue readied immediately.
Yeah, that was the quote-unquote gift, he said, that Han Pritchard gave him.
Right.
Yeah, apparently even as the mule's giving Gael nightmares, Gael is giving the mule nightmares. So that's interesting.
I like it. It's very, very Harry Potter and Voldemort, right?
And it could also reinforce a theory that you and I have been holding on to for quite some time now.
I think especially if you separate the two clauses of what he's saying about Gael and the dreams, I think I think Gael is actually a red herring here.
I do too.
And I don't want to say more than that because I think that's too much. I'm so pleased with how I know people have beef with this mule. I see it all over our Discord. On Blue Sky. I see it on Reddit. But I really think that they are going an interesting direction with this mule that we are not privy to yet.
Yes. And that may be part of why he is presenting the way he is.
Right.
So... Yeah, stay tuned. Again, book readers, you'll probably know what we're thinking,
right?
Hinting at. But we'll see. I mean, they could pull the rug out from under us, you know. They are such good storytellers, and I love Asimov's creativity. I love that he first thought of so many of these things. And I gotta say, he's just not always the best storyteller.
You're right.
And this is just wonderful. And they keep putting in all these little homages. There's one section I'll talk about later. They actually quote the book practically word for word.
Mm.
So it's a very loving adaptation, or almost variations on a theme or something. You know, it's
I'm
really, really enjoying it.
And at the same time, I mean, the end of this episode, and we'll get to that later, but the end of this episode was like pretty note for note from the book.
Yes.
It's kind of interesting.
Yes.
Yeah.
For sure.
Well, there's not much to say about this other than we know where the mule went from here. We don't have to speculate.
Yeah. Nope.
All right. So let's go right into what I'm calling, and I have to be very careful about my enunciation here.
Yes, you do.
The mentallic and the metallic.
Look at you.
I was really proud of myself with that one.
You should be. That is worth being proud of.
Demerzel tells Gael that Dawn is dead and demands to know why he had to die. While being choked, Gael reveals the Second Foundation and her visions of the mule. Demerzel uses her previous abilities as an interrogator to see into Gael's mind as she views the mule, but makes her go farther. There, in the darkness, she senses a subhuman hearing frequency of a black hole, meaning Gael will be orbiting a black hole in 4 months.
Yeah, there's a sobering thought, huh?
So does that mean, I mean, different sci-fi, we don't really know how black holes behave up close, right? Because we've never sent anything close to a black hole. But different sci-fi will do different things. And it seems like this one is choosing to do one where like you're just infinitely in nothingness forever.
Yeah. I mean, in this iteration, are black holes supposed to swallow all the stars in space and everything? And why isn't it swallowed you? And why are you still conscious? And
I don't know. But this has to do with Dusk's weapon, right? Like this.
I think this must
have to do with it.
I really think it must. Yeah.
I mean, they called it a black hole bomb, basically, right? Like this is. There's a reason that those two have been mentioned.
Yeah. Which also leads to some interesting speculations as to what extent Dusk will be, you know, stepping back to the central throne or whatever.
Yeah,
the middle
right.
throne, excuse me.
Yeah.
But yeah, Demerzel is clearly some pissed that Dawn is dead and insists that to Gale that she loved him. Which is interesting. And so her opening question to Gale is not what you would call gentle. And one big reveal here, all the way back to season one, when Harry is first standing trial, Demerzel saw the value of the foundation for the Empire's survival, which we heard about in previous episodes. This is why she decided to destroy the Starbridge. But big reveal number two, she was giving him data.
Yeah.
That's just really fascinating. But she still didn't know of the existence of the second foundation, only of what she called unknown variables that were causing shadows in the math. And
yeah.
Can I just pat myself on the shoulder and say, yep, I predicted that. When the first time we hear her say there are shadows in the math, I thought, I wonder if that's some second foundationers creeping around and tweaking things here. And there.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's right. You know, what else is interesting is I really like this idea that, you know, she was feeding him data for the model because he didn't have enough. I mean, we are now in a world of generative AI, right? Like that is the new hot thing.
Yep.
And regardless of how you feel about it, you know, the way this works is they have to train the models on data sets.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really interesting to think of a similar setup in this futuristic Prime Radiant AI thing, whatever it is.
This object, which is at one and the same time beautiful and impenetrable.
Right.
I think that Gale figures out a magnificent justification to give to an android for the reason for having the second foundation. It is a protective redundancy, just like the Kleons, something that any good engineer always builds into any system. Now, is that speaking right to an android or what?
I think so. I mean, Gale's very smart. We've never questioned that Gale is smart.
Yeah. And she also describes to Demerzel her own experience on her very first hyperspace jump with the spacers. And that's a real throwback. But I love the way she describes her experience by saying she could see time as a line and then as a space and then something that she could fold and bend around herself.
Mm.
And wow, didn't that get my mind spiraling into, well, what is time? You know, how does this work? And you know, unfortunately, she kind of goofs by saying to Demerzel, don't think literally.
Yeah.
Think like a spacer. Maybe too big of an ask here. to an android.
We need David Tennant in here going wibbly wobbly timey wimey stuff.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure that would help Demerzel enormously. Yeah, I just love that description. And I'm also now beginning to wonder if we might see spacers again in the future.
Wouldn't that be nice? I mean, I think they could do a really interesting thing with that now that they are, like, not involved in the main story this season.
I do, too.
I think there could be a really interesting, like, what did the spacers do after that whole thing?
Right. I mean, the initial presentation is, well, they just pulled off by themselves into their own perception of universe, galaxy, whatever.
Right.
But since we are rapidly losing all forms of hyperspace travel, bing,
right.
Maybe they will come back and say, yeah, all right, we'll help you guys out here. Can I just say, I really wish that they hadn't made Demerzel's probing devices so tentacular.
Oh, why not? I like it.
Talk about the ultimate sinus headache. Good Lord.
But doesn't it kind of make sense that, like, if you were going to get into the nerves of a human being, like,
that's
what it would look like?
I'm sure it would, and I didn't look at it.
That didn't bother me at all, and I'm usually pretty squeamish.
No, I didn't watch it the first time. I had, well, some people have more of a thing about tentacles than others, maybe. I don't know. As soon as she started talking, I thought, I know exactly what she's going to do. Particularly when she said, it is not pleasant. And I thought, oh, I'll just bet it isn't. And then Gail's retching and choking and all that. You know, the first time I just like, no, I don't, because I was eating my lunch. I mean, that's part of the problem, too.
I really loved when she goes, when Gail says, I'll need to feel like I'm drowning. And she goes, that won't be a problem.
That won't be a problem. That will be quite easy. Thank you.
Yeah, exactly.
So through this, Demerzel actually perceives this confrontation that we've been seeing on repeat loop for all three seasons so far. But she perceives that it's happening in the Imperial Library on Trantor. So that's a really big piece of information now as to, you know, the mules, moves, and whatnot. And supposedly she will be rotating that black hole in 4 months. And Demerzel is hypothesizing this from its infrasonic signature. So, of course, I had to go online to find out that an infrasonic signature is an identifiable pattern of sound that occurs far below the range of human hearing.
Mm.
Rockets blasting off, earthquakes, volcanoes, tidal waves, avalanches, waterfalls, lightning, and other events can cause them. So I wanted to know, is this something that they made up? And no, this is an actual thing.
Apparently. Yeah, no, I think our human range is actually pretty limited. I think it's 2 hertz to like 20,000 hertz, something like that. You know what, Mark, from Never Mind the Music, I called on you last episode.
Right.
Right in with the range of human hearing.
Help us out here, Mark.
Or I could just Google it, but, you know.
Nah, not now.
All right.
I also like the way Gail explains the mule and I are both outliers, and the math seems to break when you factor us into the future, especially my future. And that she can pull parts of her future towards herself. But Demerzel just doesn't seem to buy it, which is unfortunate. She's not convinced that Gail's visions can be trusted as genuine visions, and could very well be hallucinations, but at least she's sufficiently content with her visit to leave Gail alive, which, you know, that's gracious of her. And at the end of their scenes together, we're jumping around, by the way, you know, we're pulling all the material together for each sort of group rather than going scene by scene by scene. So now we're, you know, towards the end where she hears, quote unquote, that the new foundation has been captured by the mule. And, you know, Gail is trying frantically to get in touch with Pritch.
Yep. I don't think that's going to go very well. I don't think she's, I wonder, so is that the necklace? Oh, it's the necklace probably that lights up, right?
Oh, that's an interesting thought. I hadn't even thought about that. She just pulls out a little round crystally.
I feel like it might be the necklace. That's his bat signal. You know?
It could be. It could be. I mean, can she do that sort of thing with the crystal she took from her cheeks?
Oh, I don't know.
And maybe it isn't the crystal she took from her cheeks. Who knows?
Right.
But somebody said they looked at an image and they could see 6 indentations.
Okay.
In a close-up of the leather pouch. So,
huh.
I don't know.
No, that's interesting.
We'll see.
I did, by the way, look up the human hearing range. It is 20 hertz to 20 kilohertz. So 20 hertz to 20,000 hertz.
Well, see, that's exactly what you said. Well done.
Well, I said 2 hertz at first, but
you did. That's okay.
That's all right. I was off by 18 hertz.
Oh, shucks. Darn.
It really hurts.
So now you're thinking, now I'm thinking if that is what she's communicating to Gail, then Pritch's sometime partner is going to get privy to the fact that A, there's this Gail out there. B, this communication is coming from nowhere. And I wonder if that's going to lead to some kind of a leak to the first foundationers that the second foundation exists. Because that isn't true in this universe of this story.
Mm-hmm. Ember's going to be like, what the devil do you want from me?
If he survives.
Yeah, I'm not having high hopes for Ember's survival.
I don't know. He's so bumbling and incompetent that if he survived without any of his advisors, it probably wouldn't be all that much of a challenge.
Yeah, but I feel like the mules is going to want to get rid of him. This mule is very brutal. I mean, very quick to slay the rulers.
Yep, definitely.
His guillotine is, it needs frequent sharpening.
Somehow I doubt it. I think it's a constantly, constantly sharp device.
All right. Well, I am very excited about the scene. Anything else for this this confrontation between Demerzel and Gale?
Well, I do have a speculation, which I put at the end, but I can bring in now if you like.
Sure.
Yeah, the whole exchange in which she talks about, you know, when Gale first comes to, or after that's after their final vision, when they both get kind of shocked back into reality mm-hmm. again. And Demerzel has to do the, not the Heimlich, but, you know, she has to do the pumping and the breathing and whatever to bring mm-hmm. Gale back. Demerzel says that, tells Gale, no, you didn't die. Your heart just stopped beating. Which, you know, all right, android view of the world, maybe. But, I mean, it is true, obviously, because they restarted the heart and she was fine. I'm thinking back to how Demerzel described Dawn as being dead. I think she believes it.
Yeah.
No, because I do too. She was, as I say, she was furious. And yet, she says all his systems shut down.
And then she says, and that his nanite stopped responding, right?
And his nanite stopped responding. And by almost a similar phrasing, she says, your heart just stopped beating. That's a system shutting down. I don't know. Maybe I'm reaching too far. It just seems to be this big mystery, and a lot of people are talking about it on our Discord about, well, is Dawn still around or is he not? I think if Demerzel says she's dead, that's probably a pretty good indicator. But, I mean, can she even be wrong sometimes? I don't know.
Yeah, and also people, you just to be clear, you mentioned on the Discord, they're discussing episode 5 still because they haven't seen episode 6. So they haven't heard Demerzel
say that
he's dead. Right. I think that you could be right. I think Dawn could be alive. I kind of would like that. Like I, you know, we already had a Dawn float out into space and die. I wouldn't be devastated if this Dawn died, but I would like to see him again. I thought he was a really interesting incarnation of Dawn.
Yeah. And there's an interesting parallel here between Day and Demerzel. They both think they love someone. I wonder if they really do.
Yeah.
How can that actually be genuine? I don't know.
I don't know, especially with Day, because he's such a weird situation, right? Like every person he's ever, you know, concubined with has had their memories wiped. And I mean, I was pretty shocked about, well, no, let's wait till talk about Day. We're going to be there next.
We will be there next.
Let's take a quick break before we head over to Mycogen.
Let's.
Hey everyone, David here. Wanted to tell you about a company that makes some really beautiful Middle Earth inspired products. Actually, I wish I had discovered Osha slings when my daughter was little and I was using a lot of different baby slings and carriers. They sent me one of their Ancients of Gondor Ithildan baby carriers. Honestly, the design of this carrier is cool as hell. The quality is impeccable. It's a really smart design and super easy to use. I wish I had this when I needed it. I would have loved to show off my dad nerd cred at the time. But they also sent me a really nice blanket, the Misty Mountains Throw. And now that same daughter, she monopolizes it whenever she's on the couch. It's beautiful, just the right weight. It's brushed cotton, so it's breathable and keeps us really cozy. We've been having a lot of cold weather lately, so we're always fighting over who gets to use it. A little about Osha. They're a family-owned Scottish company. They've been handcrafting products since about 2010. Everything's ethically sourced and made in their solar-powered workshop. Check out their website. They've got a bunch of information about their sustainability practices. That's something that's really important to me. And they have this huge line of official Lord of the Rings products. They're making baby carriers, throws, scarves, mugs, tea towels, and the designs are stunning. Like, go check out the website right now. There's a link in the show notes. New customers get 10% off with the code LOREHOUNDS. Go to OSCHASLINGS.com.
Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab-tested, real results. Go to Mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's Mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
We're back and ready to talk about Mycogen. After buying some Primo drugs, Day visits Song and gives them to her as a peace offering. He tells her he knows about the inheritance and tries to give her all her memories back, but she refuses. Instead, she calls her partner and the two of them detain Day.
Yes, I like to call this Day's big Mycogen adventure.
It's been a fun time. I mean, this is exciting. This is the first time we get to see, other than in a very controlled environment, a Day off of Trantor. I mean, I guess with the whole religious journey that he went on in season one, but even then, I feel like that's still a pretty controlled environment.
It was. Even then, he was still Empire. And I think now he is Empire in the eyes of all the Mycogens, certainly.
Right.
But I'm not sure that he sees himself that way. What I saw him as, a backpacker on the hippie trail in South Asia, or possibly even Kathmandu, and see Rick Steves.
Well, hey, though, I mean, the slopes of Mount Everest are littered with many people like that, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Although I don't know if they have the same kind of shades. Anyway, they're really going over the top with his appearance, in my opinion, but it's not bothering me.
I'm enjoying it.
I am too. By the way, I don't think those were drugs.
No?
I think they were sweets, because the sweet seller's pitch for her wares was an exact quote taken directly from Prelude to Foundation.
Huh.
And there is no sense in that at all that these are drugs. They're just remarkably delicious sweets from some of the best kinds of whatever fungi or whatever it is they're using. It's the high quality stuff. They tend to they export the lesser stuff.
Primo stuff is what I was saying, you know?
Yeah, but not the stuff of drugs, the stuff
all right.
of food.
What do you think, dear listener? Do you think it was drugs? Do you think it was food?
Yeah, right in. Right in, empire@thelorehounds.com.
That's right. Let's get the debate going. The great primo substance debate.
Yeah, I think the sweet seller recognized his face immediately.
It's very hard to hide. I mean, he's not even a Dusk, right? Like, he is
yeah.
a Day. He is the middle throne. The guy who they put on all the posters.
Right. And the coins. Well, I don't have coins anymore, do they? No. And all of the damage to her face would suggest to me that she was an active participant in various forms of resistance in recent years. So, she would definitely recognize this individual with all of his really bizarre trappings. As,
right.
You know, Empire! The Empire. God, Day is so out of his depth with any sort of wooing. It's just really...
Absolutely.
Like, you could almost feel sorry for him if it wasn't, I don't know.
Maybe it wasn't a little genocidal.
Creepy. Yeah. It's creepy. But I love how deftly and absolutely Song holds her ground against, you know, Day tries to, you know, did you ever wonder why I kept you on so long? And her response is, maybe it's ego. Game, set, and match right there.
Yeah. But it was really great. Interesting because Song seemed so genuine in those scenes with Day.
Yeah.
That it is shocking to see, because presumably she had all her memories of her partner, you know, of her life on Mycogen, in Mycogen. But she was acting really well in that whole thing with Day.
Yeah, and I think she alludes to that a little bit later on.
But that's shocking because she's like, oh, if you sensed anything, it was out of fear. But like, was it? Yes. Or was it something genuine? And
well,
I think it might have actually been genuine.
I appreciate your romantic nature, John.
I'm really thinking very highly of everyone in the show, and I should not.
There's nothing wrong with that. I you know, I tried to do the same things myself, but and even, you know, when Day says that he actually recovered Song's memories to bring back to her, you know, my first response was, oh, maybe he really does feel something like love for her. But I think really the underlying motivation is he wants her to remember all that love so that, you know, everything can be quote unquote like it used to be.
Right.
And I have to say, if he truly loved her, then he would let her go if that's what she wanted.
Yeah.
The only time her interest peaks at all in anything he has to say is when he mentions that she encountered a robot.
Right.
Which, of course, would be a huge thing for anybody who's in the Inheritance. And another interesting point, Song had asked to keep her memories while she was still remembering everything about their liaison. And I guess that really moved Day, because he tells her, you looked at me and saw a person who might do you a kindness. So I did. But for what purpose? You know, I find myself wondering, could Song have been a plant of some kind? Not a mycogen plant, but a, you know, a spy plant. Trying to get some kind of information or something. I don't know. Because, you know, she doesn't really talk much about how she was chosen. She just says, well, you know, I was there. You chose me and so on and so on and so on. And when she rejects having the memories back, she says she doesn't wish to remember the business arrangement.
Yep.
So that, I mean, clearly she didn't come in with love from the beginning. And if this is how she is perceiving it now, I mean, I think, you know, just to save her own life, she had to comply. And if she could see that he, for whatever reason, felt that he was falling in love with her, she would feed that, even as she fed him drugs, you know? And later on, when Day insists, you loved me, you did. It just sounds like a little child to me, trying to convince himself or somebody else. So I guess this is the first time that I really do have genuine compassion for Day and all of this. Again, can't go so far as to say, yes, this is love. Infatuation, for sure. The closest he can come to love because of his life experiences, probably. But once her life mate comes into the room, I just love Song's declaration. My full name is Songbird 17, and I do not belong to you. If I ever told you I loved you, it's because I was scared of you. I never could have loved you. This is Ocean Glass 49. She's my light. Mic drop. 3 million loud cheers. I mean, I love the way she stands up for herself. I love the way she just has this strong certainty. And when she feels that she's not going to be able to handle it on her own, she calls in reinforcements who very definitely can handle it in the form of her life mate, Ocean Glass. I love the name Ocean Glass. I love Sea Glass. I love picking it up anytime I was, you know, walking along a beach, which also makes me wonder, Ocean Glass, this is a traditional name, a family name, presumably going back many generations. Where the heck is there an ocean on Trantor?
Yeah, right. I was thinking the same thing. Like, Ocean Glass is quite the name to have.
Yeah,
And I'm still very thrown off by the numbers. I had messaged you like, is this a robot thing? Are they robots too?
I know. Well, we have certain, you know, ideas or impressions in our minds.
At least they didn't have like an R in front of their name, like in the robot series for Asimov.
But, you know, to have your leading family be called Sunmaster. When was the last time anybody saw genuine sun on Trantor outside of the Imperial Palace?
Yeah, that's interesting.
These names, I think, reach back to a very deep history on Trantor. I mean, mentioned before last episode about how Mycogen was just one layer of city and there was others just built successively on one on top of the other. They don't really talk as much about the domes in this adaptation. But in the original series, Trantor was covered by domes. And it just was sort of a haphazard thing. First, one area built a dome around themselves and then another and another and another. And you can still go up topside if you want to, though most Trantorians, you know, really don't want to. Thank you very much. Find it a little too spooky. And there's still signs of life there. There's dust that blows around and gives enough space for, you know, some poor pathetic seeds to take root. I mean, it's an interesting conception, which I think rightly for this series, they don't really investigate because it's not essential to their plot and to the story that they're telling. But my understanding is that outside the Imperial grounds, there's nowhere on this planet surface that has access to the sky and to natural lighting. They have to go way up the top.
Yeah, this whole Mycogen area, I think, is the coolest biome that we've gotten this season of Foundation.
I agree.
For sure. Even last season, I thought that most of what we got was very standard, you know, Tatooine fare kind of thing.
Sure.
But this season, I'm really liking this Mycogen stuff. This feels the closest thing that I've seen in any other fiction is in the Elder Scrolls games. There's a lot of mushroomy type of flora around.
I don't know. Maybe there's mushroom animals too.
That's true. That could be a thing. But yeah, I think that's the closest thing. You know, check out our Skyrim episode. Did an episode on Skyrim. If you back in the day on the Lorehounds Play, me and Brandon. So if you want to hear about all that, Blackreach, I think, is the area we talked about. But anyway, I really like a nice big mushroomy area in a science fiction or fantasy area.
Yeah. And I really find myself wondering about Day's final outcome. I mean, he's still alive when we leave this whole scene, but there's Ocean Glass saying, Cleon the First almost wiped out our people. That will never happen again. And Day kind of pathetically responds, I have this face I can do nothing about. You know, it wasn't me.
Yep.
I just don't think that's going to be very convincing.
No, but I do think what will be not convincing, but save him for at least an interrogation, will be the idea of you saw a robot.
Yes. I think that's going to be a saving grace for him as whenever Songbird gets around to putting it out. And I find myself wondering, was this why Demerzel decided that this particular iteration of Day was no longer going to trouble them? Because she knew full well what the Mycogenians would think about a Day actually showing up, whatever his number.
I don't have to waste any energy killing him. He'll get killed himself.
Particularly since he's ditched his nanites and his aura bracelet.
He has no protection now.
Defenseless.
Yeah. And this is the first time in his life he's been defenseless.
Exactly. And I don't think that's going down very well either. I mean, he's just kind of bewildered with the whole thing.
He should have ridden in on the camel he made.
I don't know. All he has to do is start saying, I know a robot. And maybe that, as you say, that will preserve him at least long enough to give forth all that he knows before they kill him in a really painful way. And again, I did find myself wondering, well, was Songbird infiltrated into the Gossamer Court intentionally? Had they already heard rumors that there was a robot and she was sent to explore them out? Because she's the one who kind of pushes him.
Yeah, that's true. And she gets him hooked on drugs.
She's saying, you know, why do you keep referring to her as an it? And, you know, at the crucial moment, she says, look, if the world is going to end in 4 months, why keep secrets any longer? So I, again, as I'm talking about this with you, I'm suddenly thinking, maybe there was a bit more intention to having her go in the first place.
Yeah, and maybe that's why she was so pushy about keeping her memories, too.
Good point. Good point. And yet now that she has the option to get them back, she does not want them.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think what's going to happen is she's not going to want them back because she doesn't want to remember her infidelity and she doesn't want to remember any kind of... It seems like she genuinely perceives this as like a sex slavery thing. And
well, would you call it?
I think that you're right in that. I think it's very possible that within the situation they formed a genuine connection, but it doesn't change the origin of it, and it doesn't change what it was in the end, which was a business transaction.
Yeah, a connection that's only the kind of connection which is possible between two people who have such disparate power.
Right, right. And so it was never going to be kosher. No. Right, it was never going to be okay. And no. So she, on the outside of it, is like, I don't want to relive that. It's obviously horrific to even think about for her. And right. You don't blame her. I think what's going to happen is either her partner or somebody higher up is going to say, we need that intel and he won't give it to us until you put the memories on.
Yeah. And I think I have to think that Ocean Glass was in on it from the beginning.
Yeah.
I mean, if they're life partners, what's she doing wandering around in such a fashion that, you know, the Imperial... spotters for inhabitants of the Gossamer Court are going to even see her.
Right.
She had to have put herself out in some fashion because she certainly doesn't look like most of the other denizens on Mycogen.
No. I think
the apartment she lives in is so glorious. And I mean, there are depths within depths here, layers upon layers. And I hope we get to see more of them.
Right. I think that, you know, it's going to be a very difficult emotional situation. You know, Song is really not going to want to remember. There's going to be other people with different agendas that want her to remember. And I think she's going to be pretty traumatized about it. And it's not going to be fun. And justice for Song. Song was indentured and now is being forced to relive it. And that sucks.
Yeah, I have to hope that she volunteered for this.
Yeah.
So there was some agency involved. But
right.
Yeah. They couldn't necessarily count on him bringing the memories to her, though. That's you know, all of that is kind of sketchy.
Yeah.
In terms of a through line plot.
Right. I mean, maybe part of her training beforehand was like, ask and ask and ask about your memories. Yeah, do your best to let him keep the memories. Maybe they don't send a lot of people there. Maybe this was like a thing where they didn't know how strict it was with wiping memories.
Possibly. You know, you'd think that kind of gets around after a while, but much depends on what circles she moves in to know any of this.
If you're an emperor and you're going on the menu of women that you have, are you going to pick somebody from Yeast Town?
That's what I mean. It's highly unlikely.
You know what I mean? That's what I was saying, too, is like, I don't think that a lot of Mycogenians get sent up there.
I wouldn't think so. If only because, as you say, you know, yeast people.
Right. I mean, so maybe this was the first time that they tried something like this, right? Who knows?
Could be. Even Dusk calls her the yeast woman or whatever it is he calls her.
Great.
And I can see why you jumped immediately to drugs now when you saw the candies.
Yeah.
Because, of course, she kept giving them the mushroom puffers.
Right. And there's mushrooms everywhere. And I was like, oh.
Yeah. And they may well just leave that whole thing ambiguous and not ever explain it to us. But I definitely saw it as sweets, just simply sweets.
I think it's fine either way. I do too. All right. Ready to talk about the Mallows.
Oh, let's do it.
Torin and Beta plead to be allowed on New Terminus, eventually succeeding in being locked up on planet. They finally convince Inber to listen to the Visi Sonor. And Randu and Inber realize they must work together against the Mule. The group heads to the vault, where Harry Seldon appears and begins discussing the civil war between the traitors and the Foundation as if it has already happened. When asked about the Mule, he becomes confused. The Mule appears Destroying the Foundation ships in the sky, Harry Seldon expels them all, and the attendees all attempt to escape.
Yeah, and this adheres very closely.
Yeah.
To the original story. So that was really nice.
Yeah.
To see it visually realized so richly.
Yeah, I was a little worried they weren't going to be able to do the scene, because I think it's one of the best scenes in the book, honestly.
I do too.
And I was worried they weren't going to be able to do it, because part of the drama is Harry in the book is a recording. And so he's just going on and on about the Civil War, and then everybody just starts arguing and is like, oh, what do you mean a Civil War? Oh, God, we have a truce right now. We messed up the whole thing. Why isn't he talking about the mule? But I think without the recording, I mean, this is basically the same thing.
Well, it is. And he starts to feel more and more like a recording.
Right.
Because at this point, you realize that he's flawed.
Right.
The hologram is flawed. The whole plan has gone off in a cocked hat, which is not a comforting feeling if you have been resting on the comfort that, oh, well, even in the worst times, Harry already foresaw it. He has a plan. He'll take care of it all.
And, right.
Yeah. Which isn't a healthy way for society to continue to grow and develop. And I think I liked the way the actor played the part. I'm blanking on his name. That, you know, Harry was clearly in control of it all. And, you know, I love his dissing of Inver, his ghosting, basically. It's like, yep, you're one of them. Okay, fine. Turn away. I want to talk to the important people.
Right, right.
But his face just went absolutely blank. And I could almost hear him thinking, this does not compute. This does not compute. This
right.
does not compute. I right. mean, that was, to my mind, when he appeared to be his most holographic.
Right.
Which, as you say, different from the books, because in the books, he doesn't even know if anybody is coming to listen to him or not.
Right.
He does not, the recordings do not interact with the people who are listening to them. Whereas this is far more interesting and far more interactive.
And in some cases, crises happened and nobody came in the books.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
And I'm talking about before this point in the books, the second, there were kind of like intermediary crises, and it was just a different organization of it. But, you know, like they just wouldn't go see the vault, and nobody even knew if Harry came.
Well, they felt things were trucking along very nicely. Thank you.
Right.
And I think, again, compression for the visual storytelling. You know, they only want to have three crises at this point. They don't need all this other
one crisis per season. Thank you very much.
It was nice to see Torin at least partially clothed up top.
I was like, man, so this shirt was making me laugh when he's in the ship, because he's got sleeves finally, but the middle is cut out. So you're like, does this give you any protection or warmth or anything, or is this just what was the point of this?
From my perspective, it only makes him potentially more interesting, which women have known for centuries. You know, you don't flaunt at all. You just, you know, make it look like it might fall apart.
I'm liking it. I think he's a fun guy.
Oh, I do too. I think he's terrific. And to some degree, that whole posturing is part of his persona.
Yeah.
I was thinking, oh dear, when I heard Beta telling Magnifico, you and I can both make people love us. Oh boy. Yeah. And then the line where when they're approaching New Terminus and he's having the conversation and he says, I like being famous, but this feels like being important. And Beta responds, no, Tori, famous and important are the same thing. It's in our wedding vows, remember?
Oh, gosh. That's pretty good.
You know, Han, they might have thought that Han Pritchard was a name to conjure with, since Han kind of pulled him into all this morass to begin with. On the one hand, it did keep him from being exploded, but, you know, it also got them thrown in jail. So, you know, on balance.
Right. Well, they do get released at a certain point. I guess because they have the influence, the emotional influence, at least, of the Visi Sonar.
Well, again, it's a question. You know, Torin convinces Indber to take them into his office and hear them out. Was it just he? I don't think there was any music playing at that point.
Right. No, I think that the convincing was with the Visi Sonar later.
I do too.
Yeah,
I do too.
The big convincing, because they are at each other's throats before that, and then all they do is, I mean, Torin does do the whole, you know, just hear us out for a minute and find me. We'll hear you out for a minute.
Right.
But that's not a lot. What they needed to do is, like, you know, drop their arms and point them towards the other enemy, the common enemy.
Sure. And so when Inber wants to pull Magnifico out on his own, Magnifico responds, I don't come without my lady, her pet, and leader Randu. Now, you know, I can see where he might figure that my lady would be more comfortable if Torin were around. You know, when is Torin going to finally get the respect he deserves? Come on, her pet. Really?
Oh, I mean, he's a little pet-like. He's a little pet-like with her.
Well, whatever. I also wonder why Magnifico wanted Randu to come along. Since Randu was the one who was stirring up so much trouble so much of the time, if he wants a calm sea and a prosperous voyage, why did he just say, yeah, just, you know, the three of us, Randu can stay here. I have my suspicions as to why, and I suspect you probably do too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I really enjoyed watching this whole scene. I mean, this was absolutely incredible, an incredible adaptation. I didn't love the mule just like grinning from the sky. I was like, I could have done without that. But at the same time, like, you know, you gotta show the villainy somehow, and they sure did.
Well, it's part of a theme, isn't it? I mean, if you think about more and more how we're seeing this dude. Anyway. Yeah. Say no more for now. And I just thought it was so touching that Torin truly held the belief that as long as we have the Visi Sonar, we can defend ourselves. Oh, sweet summer child.
Oh, no.
No. And I guess Inber is not quite as stupid as he seems, unless it's simply that he has very good staff around him, which I rather suspect. Or he's being manipulated. Hello. But he does figure out that Han is working for somebody else. Partly because Han knew about the mule before anybody else did.
Right.
But also Han forgot to wipe his mileage counter.
Well, I think it wasn't the mileage counter, right? It was the amount of fuel left. He didn't get gas before he came home.
He didn't gas up again.
You got to fill up the tank.
That's what it was. You always have to return the rental car with a full tank. Possibly the consequences will not be quite as dire, but still. Usually good plan. And, you know, Han is just a consummate smooth talker. You know, when Inber is saying, so where does your loyalties lie? Who are these people that you're seeing? And he says, I only worked for the Selden plan. Which is true. And probably a very important thing for everybody to remember. But, of course, we're shortly to find out that the Selden plan, as they know it, is shattered in pieces around this point. But, alas, evidently Inber is as stupid as he seems, because he's the one who decides to have Magnifico play to all the troops, so that the mule cannot control them. And, of course, I wonder, was he influenced to make that decision anyway? So,
well, something's going on here. Either Magnifico is not as powerful as the mule, or Magnifico was on the side of the mule.
Yeah, right? I mean, it's interesting because being the mule's, you know, clown, quote unquote, they already showed us that he has to stay on the mule's good side or he gets physically abused.
Right. Well, also, I mean, part of this was just, it was the null field, right? So it could have been the people on the ground weren't being affected at all by the mule. It was, or by Magnifico even, it was just the null field making everybody run away.
Yeah, that could be too. I found the new terminus look interesting. You know, when they're coming out of the buildings, and it did remind me of New York City, but I suppose anytime I see any tall buildings that look like skyscrapers, that's what's going to come into my mind first, because I grew up an hour outside New York City and went in there a lot all the while I was growing up. But I found my pilgrimage to the opening of the vault very moving. And Bear's music definitely enhanced that feeling. And what really touched me was seeing the flags planted along the path. And I'm wondering, are these now holy relics from the childhood of Polly Varisov? Because we saw them in the first season. Remember, the kids would plant flags as to how far they got into the null field before they collapsed.
Mm.
And now here's this path up to the vault, and it's lined with these flags. I really liked that. And there was an interesting touch I noticed the second watching. There's a suggestion of a labyrinth in the ground around the vault. I can't remember if that was true from earlier iterations. It could be.
I don't think so, but maybe. I mean, I will say I don't think these would have been Polly's flags, just because they had to leave regular Terminus in quite a hurry. So I don't think they were able to bring any of them.
Well, I don't know. If they could bring everything else, why not some flags? But I mean,
I just don't think it would have been the first thing they picked. But yeah.
The original one might not be there. Maybe he always carried it on his person. Who knows?
No, I think it's probably still a thing that the null field's still there, right? So I'm sure that kids are like, how far can you go?
Sure. This looked a little more ceremonial, though, if not actually hieratical, because it was flag after flag after flag along the set path.
Yeah, maybe.
To go up to it. They weren't at different, you know, distances from the vault at that point. So I loved the characterization of how these two factions within the Foundation are functioning. This is Holo Harry now. That the traitors are too undisciplined and the mayors are too authoritarian. And it really, they did that moment very well when everybody realizes that Holo Harry has no knowledge or understanding of who or what the mule is. You know, that moment when he says, what is the mule?
It's right.
Like everybody,
oh no.
We're in trouble now.
Right. Yeah. No. As soon as they realized that Harry didn't know, they were like, oh boy. I mean, you based your entire existence around this guy's plan, right? And now
exactly.
He doesn't know.
Exactly. And I think that's part of the ongoing theme of this, is how do you provide enough assurance to a society without making them so self-assured that they stop growing and challenging themselves and moving ahead? Because that was a basic foundational principle of psychohistory, that a population needed to be put in a situation of pressure so that they would be urged, if not actually forced along a path of greater creativity to solve problems that they might not otherwise have gotten around to. And that's how it was in the early days. But lately, obviously, if you have hereditary mayors and whatnot, authoritarian for sure. And is the foundation growing? Is it changing? Is it coming out with new technology? And, you know, when challenges come along, do they just kind of flap their hands and say, oh, well, Selden plan. I don't need to think about it.
Right.
Which, again, very, very true to the books.
Yeah. Some people will say, I need to help the Selden plan along. Others will say, Selden plan will work out.
Right. Selden helps those who help themselves. Didn't somebody actually quote that in this episode?
I don't think
I've heard somebody say that recently. Selden helps those who help themselves, I think. Or maybe it was because I'm reading the series.
Yeah, it might be in the books. I think I recognize that, but I think it might be a book thing.
I think so. Yeah, I think you're right. Any other thoughts?
I think that this whole planet is screwed. My biggest thing is Gail completely underestimated the mule, right? Gail was like, I'll make a trap for him and it'll be fine. And the mule said no. And even if Gail had lured him to Trantor, I mean, it seems like the mule could have just dealt with the Foundation whisper ships anyway by, you know, making them kill each other.
Yeah, well, that is sort of the question of how his influence works. Does he have to be present? I mean, the Visus owner seems to be very tightly connected to it.
But clearly the range has to be quite large to be able to get all these ships attacking each other.
Well, but remember, Inber ordered Magnifico to play the Visus owner in the hearing, and to he broadcast this to all of his officers, right. and you know.
So you think Magnifico's in on it?
I think we know that Magnifico's music influences people.
I think that's right. I think that's right. And so the question is, how much is Magnifico? How much is the mule?
Yeah, yeah. But again, you know, we saw in the dance hall that people who were there, well, Han in particular, of course, perceived that the music wasn't just this great stuff to rock out on. It was right. having an effect on the people who heard it.
Marilyn, we're going to do a post-credits this episode.
Okay.
All right. So for now, hold all your thoughts on the mule for then. And for now, let's just talk quickly about what's coming on the network. We'll be back next week with another episode of Foundation. For now, you can check out Alien Earth is out the night we're recording this. So David, maybe by the time that this comes out, he'll already have an Alien Earth episode out. If not, within a couple days. And he's going to be doing that with a slew of guest hosts. So that'll be a lot of fun if you're into the Alien universe. Mm-hmm. I know Alicia and Jean just did Fantastic Four and the Eternaut. Mm. They I also did Superman. So check out all that. And we've got Peacemaker coming too. So stay tuned for that. Alicia and Aaron are going to be covering it together. I don't know if Jean's on that with them. He might be on that with them, but we'll see. We'll see. Stay tuned for more news on that. You can also hear on the subscriber feed, which is Patreon Supercast, $5 a month. It's pretty worth it. You get, I think we have like almost 100 extra episodes on there now.
Cool.
That you don't get in the free feed. So, you know, it's been 3 years, so we do at least like 2 a month now.
Excellent.
So, yeah, you can check out Heat. Alicia and David did Heat as our 11Zs this month. They mercifully left me off it while I had COVID, also because I had very little interest in that movie, and they went on for almost 3 hours about it. So that's
three hours
of bonus content you can get, in addition to, I think, a couple hours on tacos with Second Breakfast. So check all that out. On the affiliate feeds, if you want more Marilyn, check out Rings and Rituals. If you have not already, you can add that to your backlog and catch up on Rings of Power Season 1.
Yeah.
You can also check out Nevermind the Music. I've been poking fun at Mark, but he runs a great podcast with Nicole, and they go into music and psychology all day long, every Tuesday, new episode. Who's this?
I just listened to what is now, in this time, their most recent episode dropped, and finally it was about people I knew. It was Dionne Warwick and Burt Bacharach, and okay, yeah, I know these. I can sing along. So
well, that's great. Yeah,
I just felt one.
I'm glad.
Great sense of relief. Yes,
I'm glad.
It's finally something I can really dig into, and it was great. Of course, I mean they're really great. They've got a good thing going.
Yeah, definitely. Check out to the other affiliates, Radioactive Ramblings, doing their Fallout Lore to prep you for Fallout Season 2 in December. And Alicia's affiliate podcast, Woolshift Dust, doing Dune right now, and the Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast, which covers the Star Wars Canon Timeline in spoiler-free order, chronologically. Mm-hmm. So, plenty of things for you to listen to. Please go and do that. For now, and remember, stick around post credits and we'll do a little bit of spoilery talk, me and Marilyn. All right. For now, I just want to thank everybody, our Discord server boosters, Aaron K, Tiller the Thriller, Doove71, Athena A, Listu, Nancy M, Ghost of Partition, and Radioactive Richard. And our lore masters, Martian, Michael G, Michelle E, Brian P, SC, Peter OH, Adam S, Nancy M, Doove71, Brian 8063, Frederick H, Sarah L, Garrett C, Matthew M, Sarah M, Andre B, Kwang Yu, Deadeye Jedi Bob, Nathan T, Alex V, Sub-Zero, Aaron K, Deli V, Mothership 61, Gnarls, Kathy W, Listu, Jeffrey B, Elisa U, Neil F, Ben B, Scott F, Stephen N, Julia F, Kali S, Ilmariel, /Tim, Paul K, Bobby C, Jessica H, and Adrian. Thanks everyone for all your support. And stick around after the credits if you want big book spoilers that Marilyn and I are going to talk about.
Thanks, folks. See you next time.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening. All right, Marilyn, big spoiler warning here. We're going to talk full spoilers for the books.
Good, good, good.
I just feel like we're dancing around this and people are going to be wondering what we're dancing around. So,
did I blow it, John? I'm sorry.
Oh, you did for a minute, but I edited it out.
Oh, so you're fine. Of course you did. Good. Thank you.
Well, I will have edited it out by the time you get this. I marked it for editing.
Right. I tried to recover, but
yeah. No, I think you did. I think you did. I was just like, because you I think let slip that Magnifico, I think almost certainly is a mule.
Yeah. I tried to cover up and saying, oh, did I say Mule?
You said the mule when you meant Magnifico.
I did. And I said, oh, did I say that? I meant this, but that might not be enough for perspicacious listeners. So apologies.
That's why I was like, that's why I questioned you on it. I was like, let her say that one more time with the right name.
That's good. No, I appreciate that. I appreciate that. But yeah, they just really do seem to be pointing towards that more and more. Unless they're, you know, thinking six dimensional chess level and they're going to pull up the rug from under even us.
Right. So if you have not read the books, I'll just be clear. Magnifico is the mule secretly in the books. And there isn't even a figurehead mule in the books. It's just like people assume that the fleet has the mule with it.
Right.
But it turns out in the end that Beta has figured out that Magnifico was the mule all along. Mm-hmm. He was not just the fool for the mule. He was the mule all along. And the Visisonor is sort of what he uses to mask the powers, you know. Makes you feel like, oh, it's just the music making me feel a certain way. But it was actually the mule the whole time. And so many clues at this point. I mean, the fact that they're all talking about how the Visisonor is part of the tool of the control that the mule is using. The fact that I think you've pointed out, Marilyn, the music is always happening when the mule is doing the mind control.
Yeah, yeah.
At least always.
I have yet to remember an incident when it wasn't happening that way.
Even this time, like you were pointing out here, while Magnifico is playing is when the ships start killing each other, right?
Well, it's shortly after that, but they've been prepped.
Yeah.
They've been put under the influence or whatever. And so once they all arrive, it's easy enough to just, you know, flip that little switch and say, okay, go to it.
Right. And then I think another clue is that the mule in name woke up this time and says, I feel like I've been wearing someone else's dreams.
Yes. Yes. And that was when I said, okay, guys, you better not put any more flags out here.
Yeah. They're really, but I think it'll be cool if people can figure it out on their own too, you know, from the clues in the show. Absolutely. I think that was a smart way to do it, especially because I think Gale was a red herring here, right? He goes, Gale's in my dreams, but those are two different things, right? One is I'm wearing someone else's dreams, and the other is Gale Dornick is in my dreams.
Yes, yes, yes. No, that was a very clever way of putting it through. And you could even listen and think, oh, well, I guess because they're so similar and they're so closely linked, they've been sharing each other's dreams.
Right, the Voldemort Harry Potter, yeah.
Yeah, right.
I think we're pretty much there. This is Magnifico as the mule. And that's why, so I see a lot of people being mad about this portrayal of the mule being so like violent and traditional villain. And I think that's why I keep saying people are going to have egg on their face because they're going to be like, oh, that wasn't the mule the whole time.
Well, I mean, that's an interesting question, isn't it? Is Mule Magnifico controlling this puppet to be so incredibly violent?
Oh, I think so. Yeah.
You do? Yeah. That's interesting.
I think that this is meant to be extraordinarily cruel so that he seems like such a villain and nobody questions that that's the real Mule.
And he becomes the focus of attention.
Right. Right. Yeah. And again, we've not watched Ahead. I genuinely have not watched Ahead past episode 6.
Me neither.
So this is all from book spoilers and clues in the show. I think I was not sure if we were going to do, because in the books you just don't see the mule, right? Like you just don't see the mule until you know that it's Magnifico.
Right, exactly.
But here we did get a mule in name, and I think they are just doing that to throw book readers off too.
Yeah, and it was a clever idea, you know, but I think by episode three, both you and I were saying, well...
Yeah, I think basically as soon as we met Magnifico with the Visisonar, I was like, I think I'm full in on this is the mule, they're doing the book thing.
And when I realized how they were really coding the warlord as a Viking, was the way I put it, you know, enjoying slicing people's skin off them while they're alive and all that kind of stuff, I thought, so he's the one that's intended to catch all the attention and all the focus and whatever. And that leaves Magnifico free to, you know, go off. And, another little clue, when they took over the Starbridge before they left Calgon, and, quote-unquote, the mule says to the dying guard,
right,
you know, I'm sorry, I can't make you enjoy this. They took away my musician.
Yeah, he says, I'm upset from it, so I won't make you enjoy this. But I think, you know, if he can't, it's because he can't. Because the mule isn't
there on the Stargate at that point. So
right. We've never seen the mule act without the Magnifico with him.
Or Magnifico having been ahead of him.
Yeah.
And that's also very much like the books. It's after, you know, each planet that they touch upon.
And that's kind of how Beta figures it out, right? She's like, wait a minute. I recognize that feeling from when the mule attacked, and this happened in a later thing. So I think we're going to diverge a lot too. I mean, we already have diverged a lot from this plot line, but I do think we are ending with Maggie the Mule.
Yeah, and I'll be very curious to see how they decide to give us that reveal. And are they going to wait until episode 10?
Yeah.
Which would make sense, I mean, because that's really, in many respects, the climax of the whole thing. However, they may have written themselves into a corner here. Well, I won't say anything more about that, because that could still be something that would be a surprise. We don't need to spoil books that far in advance. But I have one idea that they might follow that would follow the plot of the books as to how they finally clear all this up.
Yeah.
And, of course, another big question is, are we getting another season after season three?
We are. It's already been renewed.
And so what material are they going to be giving us at that point?
There's questions on if they're going to follow the Goyer plan, or if the new showrunner is going to come in and, you know, clean house. Mm-hmm, but we'll see.
And did Goyer plan to follow more or less the plot of Second Foundation?
I don't know exactly. I know that Goyer had told us in an interview last year, or 2 years ago rather, that it was off ramps at seasons 3, 5, and 8.
Exactly. Exactly. So they're going through through season 4. You know, none of that is 3, 5, or 8. So what?
No, yeah, no. I think this is going to be a climax here. This is going to be, you could stop watching the series after this season.
Huh. Even though you think there's going to be a season 4.
Yeah. I think there's going to be a big wrap up this season. Again, I haven't seen it. I don't even think we have access to the finale yet. So trust me, I'm not spoiling anything. But
No, there's still, well, I think we have the title now.
I think we have the title, but we don't have the actual episode. Anyway, point is, we're not spoiling anything. I spoke to Goyer 2 years ago. He could have changed a lot of things since then. Who knows?
Fair point. You know, Particularly if he saw the handwriting on the wall and said, I better wrap this up even sooner. Maybe they'll let me stay throughout the whole thing until he just couldn't stomach it anymore. I
think, right. Who knows?
Who knows?
But anyway, everyone, that was our short book spoiler section. I hope you enjoyed it.
And I'll try to be more careful.
Oh, you're fine. I caught it right away. That's why I marked it.
Oh, you sure did. No, I could tell. I could tell. You prompted me, and I gratefully seized. I was like,
hold on there.
I seized your lifeline with gratitude, John.
I've slipped too. That's why I've had to mark too. Wheel of Time, it's so tough to remember. So tough to remember when things happen in Wheel of Time.
Yeah. Particularly with so many books to try and keep
track. I know, 15 books. I used to say 14 because it's 14 in a prequel, but Alicia kept yelling at me to say 15, so now I say 15.
Yeah, no, crikey Moses. That's And it's helpful for me that I'm reading the series along now too, but I think it could also be detrimental in terms of not spoiling.
Yeah, I stopped reading the books along. I finished Second Foundation and then I said I need an Asimov break. I have read like five of his books this year. I need a little break.
Well, on the other hand, I'm really glad that I was reading Prelude to Foundation and was at the particular point where we had all the scene with the sweet cellar. Because if I hadn't been at that point, I never would have recognized that the things she said were exactly word for word.
No, that's very cool. That's very cool. Yeah. David Goyer wrote this for you, turns out. All right, Marilyn, we've had a lovely time tonight. I'm going to call it a night, and we'll see everybody next week.
Yes, thanks, John. Good night, everybody.
Life is a workout. And Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.